fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off once again with UEFA Champions League football. Barcelona and Chelsea are battling for a quarterfinal berth this Wednesday evening in Spain, while five-time European champion Bayern Munich almost certainly will go through to the last eight in Turkey. Barcelona and Chelsea drew 1-1 last month in the first leg at Stamford Bridge in London. Barcelona's captain, Andres Iniesta, has been declared fit for the decisive second leg after recovering from a hamstring injury. At the pre-match news conference in Barcelona, Chelsea's Italian manager, Antonio Conte, praised Iniesta for his skills.
Andres Iniesta, I think, is a genius of the football. I like to compare him with Andrea Pirlo. I think we are talking about a genius of the football.
Antonio Conte is well aware that Barcelona has more than one football genius. And he says the Chelsea players will need absolute full concentration to make it to the quarterfinals.
The result of the first leg give a great advantage to Barcelona. But at the same time, I think we know very well the philosophy of Barcelona. And for sure they want to try to play their football, to try to score, to try to win the game. We have to try to do our best. We must start the game with great concentration, to stay with our head on the pitch in every moment of the game, to know that there are moments that we have to suffer, because it's not only for Chelsea, but for every team that play against Barcelona, they must be prepared to suffer.
In terms of suffering, Barcelona star Lionel Messi has inflicted a lot of pain on opponents over the years with his creativity and goal-scoring abilities. Chelsea's Brazilian midfielder Willian says he and his teammates must pay attention to Messi on the pitch.
We know the quality of Messi, you know, we know the quality of Barcelona. Have a lot of players with great quality. And of course, we have to keep eyes on Messi because he's great. He can do whatever he wants.
In UEFA Champions League action Tuesday, the Spanish club Sevilla reached the quarterfinals for the first time by beating Manchester United 2-1, thanks to second-half goals from Wissam Ben Yedder in Manchester, England. The Frenchman scored in the 74th minute with a low shot from 12 meters. And then 4 minutes later, Ben Yedder sent in a header off a corner kick that Man U goalkeeper David De Gea could only parry into his own net. That left Manchester United trailing by 2 goals on aggregate. Romelu Lukaku scored from close range in the 84th minute. But a late rally couldn't prevent Man U from being eliminated. Final score from Old Trafford, Sevilla 2, Manchester United 1. The Spanish club wins the series on aggregate 2-1 to advance to the UEFA Champions League quarterfinals for the first time. In Rome, the Italian club Roma edged Shakhtar Donetsk of Ukraine 1-0. To reach the quarterfinals on the away goals rule after a 2-2 aggregate score. The Bosnian Edin Dzeko scored the only goal of the match in the 52nd minute. Roma joins another Italian club, Juventus, in the quarterfinals. And Sevilla joins another Spanish club, defending champion Real Madrid, in the last eight. Two English clubs, Liverpool and Manchester City, also are in the quarterfinals. The draw for the UEFA Champions League quarterfinals will be held on Friday. The first legs of the quarterfinals will be held on April 3rd and April 4th, and the second legs on April 10th and April 11th. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African football news, World Cup-bound Senegal has scheduled a friendly international match against South Korea on June 11th. The match venue has yet to be decided. Both teams will use the game as part of their final preparations for the World Cup. The Lions of Teranga from Senegal have also scheduled friendly World Cup warm-up matches against Uzbekistan on March 23rd, against Bosnia and Herzegovina on March 27th, against Luxembourg on May 31st, and against Croatia on June 8th. The Senegalese will kick off their World Cup campaign June 19th in the Russian capital, Moscow, where they'll play Poland. Then Senegal will play Japan June 24th in Yekaterinburg, Russia, and the Senegalese will wrap up first-round group play against Colombia on June 28th in Samara, Russia. This will be Senegal's second World Cup appearance. At their debut, the Lions of Teranga proved to be a real surprise package, advancing to the quarterfinals at Japan-South Korea 2002. Senegal Sports Minister Matar Ba has challenged the squad to become the first ever African team to reach the World Cup semifinals in Russia. Elsewhere, Frenchman Hervé Renard, the head coach of World Cup-bound Morocco, has named a 28-man team for this month's friendly matches against Serbia and Uzbekistan. The Moroccans will meet the Serbs on March 23rd in Turin, Italy, and then Morocco will host Uzbekistan March 27th in Casablanca. Coach Renard included Ayoub El-Kaabi on the team. El-Kaabi scored a record 9 goals at the recent African Nations Championship tournament for locally based players. Morocco hosted the tournament and beat Nigeria 4-0 in the final on February 4th in Casablanca. Now, the Moroccans are in a very tough group, Group B, at the World Cup in Russia. It includes reigning European champion Portugal and 2010 World Cup champion Spain, as well as Iran. The Moroccans will kick off their World Cup campaign against Iran on June 15th in St. Petersburg, Russia. Then they'll play Portugal June 20th in Moscow and wrap up group play against Spain on June 25th in Kaliningrad, Russia. This will be Morocco's 5th World Cup appearance and first since 1998. The best World Cup showing by the Atlas Lions of Morocco came at Mexico 1986 when the team advanced to the round of 16. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to tennis, conditions at the BNP Paribas Open in California are providing some unusually close matches for big names, while others are being upset. One of the upset victims on Tuesday was 2018 Australian Open champion Caroline Wozniacki of Denmark. Craig Gabriel reports from Indian Wells, California.
Caroline Wozniacki is yet to win a title since winning last January's Australian Open. She was upset by Russian Daria Kasatkina 6-2, 6-4. This is the second time in a row this year Wozniacki has lost to Kasatkina. Wozniacki felt the conditions didn't help her. The court was playing as slow as a clay court and the ball was bouncing quite high, and that was of benefit to the Russian. This result also means she misses out on regaining the world number one ranking, which will stay with Simona Halep for the time being. Halep earlier beat China's Wang Chang 7-5, 6-1. Venus Williams was given a tough time, but she got past Anastasia Sevastova 7-6, 6-4.
Honestly, a very good match, well competed on both sides. I mean, there were some points where she just played and it was too good, and I, you know, thought I was in control of the point or winning the point, and she turned it around. It's just real talent. So figuring out those kind of moments of being able to control the point to the very end.
Juan Martín Del Potro defeated David Ferrer 6-4-7-5. Del Potro was getting frustrated early when he struggled to break serve. Marin Cilic was upset by Philip Kohlschreiber, and Feli Lopez beat Jack Sock. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, Indian Wells.
Thanks, Craig. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. At her post-match news conference in Indian Wells, Venus Williams also commented on the news that the late Althea Gibson, the first black player to win a Grand Slam title, will be honored with a statue at the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center in New York City.
Yeah, I mean, Althea has done something in history that hasn't been done before under circumstances that were, you know, basically impossible. And no one really knows her story, so there should be a statue and, you know, mandatory education about her, to be honest.
Venus Williams also says she's honored to have followed the great footsteps of Althea Gibson. Venus says Gibson's accomplishments set the stage for the success she and her younger sister Serena have had as professional tennis players. And here's some of Althea Gibson's story. She died in 2003 at the age of 76. In 1956, she became the first black player to win a Grand Slam title at the French Open in Paris. The following year, she won both Wimbledon and the U.S. Nationals, a precursor to the U.S. Open. And in 1957, Gibson won both of those tournaments again. Overall, Althea Gibson won a total of 11 Grand Slam titles, 5 in singles, 5 in doubles, and 1 in mixed doubles. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Well, you might say Althea Gibson and the Williams sisters have climbed to great heights in tennis. And on that note, the sport of climbing will make its Olympic debut at the 2020 Tokyo Games in Japan. Some of the world's best climbers are training at the City Rock Gym in Johannesburg, South Africa. It's described as Africa's first international class climbing gym. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Darren Taylor tells us more.
A young woman struggles up a high wall inside the City Rock Gym. The colors of the athlete's outfits match those of the concrete. Royal blue, fire engine red, and mustard yellow. Everywhere there are people grunting and wheezing up ropes, trying to grab the grips to pull themselves to the summit. They use specialized equipment, like climbing shoes.
They have a nice reinforced toe with a sticky rubber, allows you to get good surface tension on your toes.
Spider-Man,
exactly. And then obviously a harness if you're going to be doing the high wall problems. So the harness you tie in with the rope, and you have a belay partner who's feeding the rope through a device to make sure you don't come crashing to the ground.
City Rock manager Kelly Bishop explains that belaying secures someone on a rope. A partner maintains tension on it, so if the climber slips, there's a safety measure in place.
So you don't actually fall, you just hang, and then obviously they lower you back down to the ground at a controlled speed. When you're climbing, you actually do better the more calm and controlled you are, and moving slowly and making sure you're safe the whole time, the chance for injury is almost zero.
And when you pull your rope, you get a figure of eight. That's your first basic.
One of Bishop's instructors shows a beginner the ropes, literally. The trainers teach non-slip knots and how to put a safety harness on. Bishop says climbing makes people very fit because it combines strength and endurance, adding muscle, but not bulk.
Because you're basically fighting gravity the whole way up, you will build to your natural body shape. It's a full body workout. You're using your fingertips, your toes, your core muscle, your upper body, even your brain, because you're problem solving as you're going. How should I move my hands, etc. So it's
yeah. So we're like back to baby steps.
Climbers from around the world exercise at City Rock. Bishop describes climbing as a lifestyle choice practiced by a wide range of people.
We've got doctors, we've got lawyers, there's lots of students and school kids. Because it's so social, besides the fitness side, it's a lot of fun. You get to meet really down-to-earth people and feel part of a community.
One of them is vegan baker Pixie Fanek. She describes climbers as a special breed.
They're not to run of the more people, they're generally a little bit more aware about what's happening in the world environmentally and such. So they're much more inclined to be open-minded.
Bishop says climbing's popular with women.
Women do really well because it's not a brute strength sport. Some of the top climbers internationally are women, and you can compete with the guys head to head. It's not about how much weight you can pick up. Sometimes it's just about technique and moving your body in a certain way and not just powering them.
As hectic as it looks and sounds in the gym, yoga teacher Neon Khlapo says climbing helps her to meditate.
My heart rate tends to lower unless I'm going through some ledge fever, which is like an unexpected panic attack on the wall. But usually you don't have the room to think about anything else when you are on a wall. You're really in the moment and you're really focused.
But Nkhlapo wasn't always so composed. She describes her first outdoor cliff climb as terrifying.
I was climbing 1 minute and then I just burst into tears the next. And I think the episode lasted a good solid 15 minutes because I was like, if there is a God, God, I'll behave. Just get me off this thing.
Van Eck's battling autoimmune disease, where the body's immune system attacks healthy cells. This could lead to a variety of potentially fatal conditions, including organ failure.
I can't tell you how sick I was last year. I was in hospital. I was having an operation. I thought my life was just this big blob. Boom, I started climbing. I am a million times better. It's amazing. The only thing that saved me was climbing. I got on the wall and I was like, I'm home.
Fanek says climbing strengthens her body and mind to fight her illness. From being overweight and bedridden, she now conquers nature's steep, jagged rock faces.
That for me is the ultimate. When you're on that rock, man, it's like being alive. Oh my gosh, there's this mountain. It's been there for millions and millions of years, and I'm getting to stick my body to it and challenge myself.
Across South Africa, people like Fanek are using climbing gyms to boost their physical and mental health, with some using them as launch pads to possible Olympic glory. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And thanks to Darren Taylor in Johannesburg for that feature report. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. This is an exciting time of year for U.S. college basketball fans. It's known as March Madness, with championship tournaments for both men's and women's teams that compete in Division I in the National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA. While the men's tournament will receive much of the spotlight over the next few weeks, let's not forget the ladies. I asked sports reporter Dan Friedel for his thoughts on the women's tournament.
The women's tournament in NCAA history has been really dominated by a pair of teams. University of Tennessee, where legendary coach Pat Summitt took the Volunteers to a number of national championships starting in the 1980s when she took that team over. Over the course of the years, there's been a few other teams that have won. Our nearby University of Maryland won a championship. Stanford has been strong. Baylor was a great team when Brittany Griner was their dominating inside presence. But the other team that you have to talk about in women's college basketball is the University of Connecticut, led by Coach Gina Auriemma. The Huskies started to become a nationally known program in the late 80s and into the early 90s. Some of their top players went on to have big careers in the women's NBA and also in USA Olympic team history. The Connecticut Huskies lost However, this time last year in the national semifinals, the University of Mississippi knocked them off, ending a 111-game winning streak. And the Huskies have recovered this year to go 30-0. Looking forward to the women's games. It's a lot of fun to watch the women play, especially these legendary teams and the rivalries that they've developed over the years. So looking forward to March Madness overall, Sonny.
Finally, Dan, you speak of legendary teams, legendary coaches like Dean Smith and John Wooden. How about UConn's head coach, Gino Auriemma? 11 national titles. Does he deserve to be included among college basketball's greatest coaches?
You know, a lot of people have wondered if some of these coaches that have had success with women's teams would do just as well with the men's teams. And I think they would. I mean, there's no reason to think that the basketball between the men and the women is so fundamentally different that a successful coach on the men's side couldn't do well on the women's side, and vice versa. A strong women's coach could certainly have a strong enough presence to lead a team deep into the field. And it would be interesting to see if some of the coaches from the women's basketball world of success got a chance to coach on the men's side. And, you know, we're seeing it more and more in the professional sports. And if in college sports, you know, if one of these top-level women's coaches had a chance to coach a men's team and decided to go for it, it would be a big story. But I don't see any reason why you shouldn't consider Auriemma and Summit and Dawn Staley, who's the coach of South Carolina, the defending national champions, to be great basketball coaches, period, regardless of which gender they're working with.
Thanks, Dan. That's sports reporter Dan Friedel. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In National Basketball Association news, Russell Westbrook of the Oklahoma City Thunder has put himself in very select company after recording the 100th triple-double of his career. Westbrook scored 32 points, grabbed 12 rebounds, and passed for 12 assists on Tuesday night to help lead the Thunder to a 119-107 road victory against the Atlanta Hawks. Only three players, all retired, have more career triple-doubles than Westbrook, the NBA's reigning most valuable player. They are Oscar Robertson with 181, Magic Johnson with 138, and Jason Kidd with 107. One of the hottest teams in the NBA right now is the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors won their ninth game in a row Tuesday night when they scored a 116-102 road victory over the Brooklyn Nets in New York City. Lithuanian big man Jonas Valanciunas had 26 points and 14 rebounds for the Raptors, who also have won 16 of their past 17 games. And while I'm thinking of it, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Masai Ujiri, the Nigerian professional basketball executive who is president of the Toronto Raptors. The 47-year-old Ujiri certainly deserves credit for helping build Toronto into one of the NBA's top franchises. I mentioned Valanciunas earlier. Another international big man, the Frenchman Rudy Gobert, had 22 points and 12 rebounds Tuesday night to help lead the Utah Jazz to an easy 110-79 victory over the visiting Detroit Pistons. In more NBA news, the Los Angeles Clippers say guard Avery Bradley could miss the rest of the season after having surgery to repair muscles in his pelvic area. Bradley played last season for the Boston Celtics, and he's regarded as one of the NBA's top defensive guards. And that wraps up the March 14th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Sidrack Franklin. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late December of last year, the Trump administration unveiled its national security strategy, one of the priority actions to be undertaken by the United States as part of this new plan is the advancement and protection of religious freedom and religious minorities around the globe. Vice President Pence, in his remarks at the World Summit in Defense of Persecuted Christians, said, "Protecting and promoting religious freedom is a foreign policy priority of the Trump administration." Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Samuel Brownback, also said, "Religious freedom is the most important foreign topic today," in his remarks at the United States Institute of Peace. If there's one common thread that connects repressive regimes the world over, it is their oppression of minority religious groups. Persecution, repression, and discrimination are a daily reality for members of religious minority communities in too many countries around the world. Believers and non-believers alike are targeted for violence. Their human rights are limited or sometimes entirely restricted. The United States' response to such violations and abuses of religious freedom is based on the 20-year-old International Religious Freedom Act, which introduced the promotion and protection of religious freedom as a foreign policy priority for the United States. Over the past several years, the State Department has provided strategic guidance to its embassies and consulates about how to consistently advocate for rights of members of minority communities and promote their equal treatment in society. Recognizing the importance of preserving cultural heritage, the State Department has developed a partnership with the Smithsonian Institution to train church and other leaders of minority faith communities on how to protect ancient places of cultural significance. The department has also worked with the Organization of American States to recruit countries in our hemisphere to join these efforts to combat persecution in other regions. Nonetheless, there are increasing numbers of actors who continue to attack members of religious minority groups and undermine religious diversity. In response, we must stay committed to emphasizing the universal importance of this fundamental freedom. We can achieve lasting results by building and protecting environments where everyone can enjoy freedom of religion or belief.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is on a five-nation tour of Africa, and high on his agenda are talks on counterterrorism and advancing mutual ties with nations on the continent. On his first trip to Africa as America's top diplomat, he is expected to meet with leaders from Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. U.S.-Africa relations is the topic on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.